to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second of 3 hours of tonight's live installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio tonight by, of course, my co-host and good friend, Bill Rowland. It's Saturday evening, May 16th, and as always, we're coming to you live from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRN Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, and going out to our affiliates and satellite, internet, all courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, and, of course, our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, we spent the pretty much the entirety of the first hour going behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander, for those of you and some of our affiliate markets who are just tuning in, discussing the detrimental effect of the Brown versus Board of Education decision. If you missed the first hour, we highly encourage you to go back and revisit it in our broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But we were basically laying down the foundation of how cultural Marxism, the left, has been able to basically veto the will of the people by cramming down our throats that which we would never digest for ourselves from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, in other words, has been the way that the liberals have been able to push through their agenda against the will of the American people. So revisit that if you want an education of how we got from there to here in terms of our degenerating culture here in America. And one of the things we talked about during that first hour was how it would have been unthinkable back on May 16th, 1954, the eve before the Brown versus Board of Education decision, for a beauty pageant winner, in this case, Miss California, to be raked over the coals for saying something so basically universally recognized as marriage should be confined to the union between a man and a woman. Well, of course, now, Bill, I tell you, it's just going from bad to worse for this girl. And it would have, again, been unimaginable for this to have been foreseen back just, I say 1954. Again, that wasn't that long ago. But now you've got the media just savagely berating this woman. And, of course, they're doing it because they hate her, because she's white, beautiful, and evangelical, and she's not a liberal nut job. But could you imagine, Bill, the media treating a beauty contestant winner this way if she had said those exact same comments and she had been black? I mean, could you imagine it?
Well, let me just go to a place where it is becoming America, 1954 again, and that is in Russia. I have this story out of Moscow. I'm going to just bring this up in reference to Carrie Prejean. But there was an attempt by homosexual activists in Moscow to put on a demonstration there. And rather than being, you know, embraced by the press and this outpouring of sympathy and understanding, the 30 homosexuals at this Eurovision demonstration in Moscow were rounded up and arrested by the police upon the orders of the mayor of Moscow, Yuri Luskov. And Yuri Luskov is an Orthodox Christian and a man who clearly understands the dangers of homosexuality, because he has in the past called homosexuality satanic and homosexuals weapons of mass destruction. So there's one place in the world where this homosexual, this homosexual charade is not accepted as reality. And in Russia, that's one place where they see clearly the dangers of multiculturalism, because the Soviet Union forced multiculturalism and all sorts of unnatural behaviors in terms of specifically race on their own people. Now, you want to see a country that's going to come up and start to really overshadow the United States, keep your eyes on Russia, because that is what's going to happen as long as we continue our slide into degeneracy and depravity and the acceptance of unnatural behaviors.
Well, you know, Bill, we're going to talk more about this in just a minute, but a significant development has happened since our last broadcast, Saturday a week ago. On Sunday, a week ago tomorrow, the political cesspool was mentioned in one of the top stories of the London Times, which, as we've said before, is quite possibly the most read English-speaking newspaper in the world. And we were mentioned in that article alongside names such as Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, et cetera, for our role in American Talk Radio. And one of the things that they used to, I guess, in their minds, denigrate us was the fact that we were using this program to advance a certain number of paleoconservative tenets, one of which being we wanted to see a revival of the white birth rate here in America. And, of course, they said that that's racist language and so on and so forth because we'd like to see our family survive. I said all of that to say this, and we are going to talk a little bit more about that London Times article later on in the broadcast. Russia, getting back to what you said, very well may be the key to Christian survival. We have said for a long time that it may be the key to white survival, but this show, as mentioned by the London Times, yes, seeks to have a revival of the white birth rate. In Russia, just last year, I remember covering on this program, they had a day off, a national holiday, in which the government had a state-sponsored initiative that everybody take the day off and go and try to have a baby. I mean, you're right, Bill. I said all of that to say this. You are right. Russia is on the way up. If you want to see what very well could be our nation, it could be rebirthing itself over in Russia. Now, compare that to America, the once great, second to none country that was America, where we are just, my God, up, not even up to our eyeballs, we're drowning in the sea of hypocrisies and double standards and disconnects of political correctness or cultural Marxism, whatever name you have for it. Getting back to the whole homosexual debate here, I don't know what debate it is, but and the merciless ridiculing that Carrie Prejean is going under. You know, David Axelrod, you know, called her a dog on national radio because of her comments. The very mainstream and accepted comments that marriage should be between a man and a woman, comments that even the voters of California, of all places, still agree with. Called her a dog. And this is, of course, the same David Axelrod who serves as the senior advisor to Barack Obama, who said during his campaign that Don Imus should be fired for calling a black woman a nappy-headed hoe. I mean, what's the difference, Bill? Do you see the disconnect?
Well, of course there's a disconnect, because there is a perception among liberals, leftists, that they can do no wrong. And so in whatever they do is right and just and acceptable. Now, here's the thing. We all know in our from just walking on the streets every day and being out in public that homosexuality is not nearly as prevalent as homosexuals want the nation and the world to believe.
Absolutely.
They are still a subculture, and they are an aberrant and deviant subculture.
And the only reason that they're getting the press they are is because of the...
They are the press. They are the press. They're all through the media. They're all through the fashion industry. Homosexuals dominate much of the media, the entertainment industry, and so they're able to cast a much bigger shadow than their substance there's actually not much substance to the number of homosexuals in this country.
You're right. It's all a shadow, Bill. I mean, this is the mouse casting an elephant's shadow. You know, I was reading through one of these entertainment, it might have been Entertainment Weekly, and it talked about, you know, Carrie Prejean and her anti-gay flap, you know, this controversial statement. What was controversial about it? They are shaping the public's perception. And as we know, the universal truth is perception is the ultimate reality. This is a very, very small subculture, as you put it, Bill. But because they own the media, they are making it look like it's a lot more widespread than it is. And people have got to understand the difference between reality and the fiction that they write in these publications.
Yes, exactly. Well, the other thing is, of course, that homosexuals have to persist in the promotion of their lifestyle because it's unnatural. If they allowed a lapse to exist in between their promotion of their lifestyle and people's time to reflect on their lifestyle, people would reject it outright as being abnormal, unhealthy, deviant, depraved. Now, of course, we know the next step in the homosexual rights movement is going to be pedophilia. This is going to be the next civil rights movement that grows out of the fungus of homosexuality is going to be the right to abuse children.
And Bill, listen. Well, I was just going to say, we're about to go to break. I do not mean to interrupt. We're going to pick up there right where you're leaving off. And people are probably going to say, no, it'll never get that bad. Well, that's exactly what they've said about every egalitarian movement before it came into place. I mean, this is
remember
no more.
Remember 1954.
Since 1954. Absolutely. Well, we want to take your calls on it, ladies and gentlemen. 1-866-986-NEWS. Give us a call. Be on live at the Political Cesspool. James Edwards and Bill Rowland, 1-866-986-6397. We'll go to the phones and continue on with this discussion right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And we do want to hear from you. It seems as though we've been rarely able to open the phone lines since we've made the switch over to Liberty News Radio, but the phone lines are open now, and I know you were burning up the phones a couple of weeks ago. Last week we didn't have as much time to get to the lines, but we love our listening audience, and we love your input, and we want to hear from you. 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-6397. We're going to go to those phones in just a moment, but before we do, I want to finish our discussion on what we were mentioning in the last segment. It looks as though Russia is taking stands, even from a governmental level, that are very healthy, normal, and natural, while America, it goes without saying, is on a sharp decline in terms of healthy culture. And then, you know, you look around to places like the United Kingdom, and, you know, they're even worse than America. Get this. Retarded homophobes, that's what they call Christian couples that oppose gay adoption. Yes, Britain's National Adoption Agency, and I'm reading here now from the Political Cesspool blog. Of course, we cover all of the issues that we mention on this show in more detail at our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But Britain's National Adoption Agency has declared that only, quote-unquote, this is a direct quote from the State Adoption Agency in Great Britain, only retarded homophobes could ever be against homosexual couples adopting kids. I'm going to quickly read through this and turn it over to Bill. Critics of gay parenting, and I'm reading this now from a story that appeared in a paper over there, are branding retarded homophobes. People who have concerns about the adoption of children by gay couples are retarded homophobes, the state-funded National Adoption Agency said yesterday. Those who protest over controversial gay adoption laws are merely winging, whatever that means, according to the British Association for Adoption and Fostering. Its insulting description angered senior MPs and former cabinet ministers, Roman Catholic and Church of England leaders. It's also offended disability campaigners who have been trying to discourage the use of the word retard for years. Okay, anyway, Bill, that's how it is. I mean, governmental agencies in Great Britain are calling normal couples who oppose sodomite adoption retarded homophobes. That's coming from the government.
What's funny about that is, of course, this leftist pro-homosexual group basically blew itself out of its own cannon by using the word retard. You see, when it comes to political correctness, everyone gets caught in the web. Everyone gets caught in the snare. So they, you know, ruined their own case by using the wrong word. Now, if there's not a, I can't recall a better indictment of political incorrectness. This is a perfect example. But let me say this about the beauty of homosexual adoption. There is not one study, there is no evidence that homosexual adoptions are healthy or good for children. Now, if a morbidly obese couple tried to adopt a child in the United States or just about anywhere in the Western world, that couple would be very closely examined for the health that was, you know, what kind of health conditions were in the household. And yet, with no studies, with no evidence whatsoever, with no case histories, these governments, both the United States, England, and most of the free world, will turn a child, an unsuspecting child, over to a pair of homosexuals based really on their standard of living and their income. That is, if you've got the money to buy a child from the state, to bribe the state for a child because you make enough money, they'll turn one over to a homosexual couple. But if that couple smoked cigarettes, or if they were morbidly obese, or if they were poor, there would be less likelihood that a normal heterosexual couple could adopt a child under those circumstances. So there are no studies at all that I know of that can demonstrate that homosexual lifestyles are good for the raising of children. Yet we turn our children, our orphan children, over to perverts on the risk, by sheer risk, that they might grow up normal, that they won't be exposed to obscene lifestyles and obscene acts while in a homosexual household. And I can assure you, James, that homosexuals, first of all, are not the Cleavers, and they're not the Nelsons, as in the 50s TV shows. They live an aberrant lifestyle, and they're not ashamed to display this lifestyle in front of children. So until some studies come out that demonstrate that this is a healthy environment for children, I don't think any homosexuals, under any circumstances, ought to be allowed to have a child brought into their house.
Needless to say, I agree with you, but what do our listeners think? 1-866-986-NEWS. Be on the line with James and Bill on the Political Cesspool. 1-866-986-6397. We have a listener from South Carolina on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Hi. I just have one quick question, and the thing I'm wondering about is, what is your opinion of Howard Stern's penis?
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Did you catch that, Bill?
No. I think it sounds like he had something in his mouth. I couldn't understand him. But
well, speaking of Howard Stern, the only thing I heard in that one was Howard Stern. Since we are in Great Britain, and I know we only have a couple of minutes before break, we were mentioned alongside Howard Stern. As you know, Bill, this show was written about last week in one of the top stories of the Sunday edition of the London Times. We were referenced on the front page of that story alongside such names as Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, and Glenn Beck. Now, we would normally protest being placed in such company, but in this case, we were mentioned in the same breath as theirs when it comes to the powerful role that this show plays in American talk radio. Bill, we have been covered by CNN, New York Times, Fox News, and some other very household names here in America. Did it surprise you that we were mentioned in a feature story of the London Times this week, and did it surprise you even more that we were mentioned alongside the likes of those?
Well, I don't know. It may be a case of guilt by association as far as those other broadcasters are concerned. But nevertheless, I think that what the London Times was doing was really a display of desperation. And as I mentioned in the last program, one of the previous programs, the left, and particularly the leftist media in England and in Europe, are absolutely terrified that the British National Party and some of the other rightist and right-wing and conservative parties in Europe are going to add to numbers to parliaments in various countries around Europe and perhaps into the European Union Parliament. So, you know, they're doing everything they can, and they're on this kamikaze mission to try to discredit the BNP, the Vlaams Belang, the Northern League. Any conservative right-wing group in Europe is under the same attack. And so they do it by guilt by association. I understand that on a BBC broadcast, of course, Nick Griffin was linked in vague links and ties to Don Black and some other people. So this is their tactic. This is their strategy. Anything to try to, throw stink bombs at politicians on the right while ignoring corruption and sexual scandal and incompetence by politicians on the left. This is the double standard we live by in this world, that all people on the right have to be as pure as Caesar's wife, yet on the left you're allowed to get away with anything because you're a left, you know, the people on the left have the moral high ground. They are the moral examples for the world.
We'll be back with more in the political cesspool right after these words.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big girls don't cry. Big girls don't cry.
You are listening to the political cesspool. We're back on the air. And we welcome you to the show. If you're just joining us, I'm Bill Rowland, and host James Edwards had to make an important phone call to someone he loves or someone he needs to talk to. So I'll be your host for the next few minutes. Don't know if we have any callers. If we do, we'll get you up on deck. And if you would like to call into the show, we'd love to hear from you. We love our listeners. We love to hear from you, even those who make prank phone calls that aren't very funny. But the number is 1-866-986-6397. Give us a call toll-free, and we will take your call. Tonight we've been talking mostly about, of course, the culture war that goes on all over the world against normal Christian white males, particularly in this strange world we live in. But, you know, nevertheless, there isn't all bad news in the world. As we mentioned in the previous segment, the mayor of Moscow took decisive action to stop a homosexual demonstration in his fair city, and he did so by throwing the demonstrators in jail. They didn't get much of a chance for publicity. They were simply dragged off and locked up. So, you know, unfortunately, people in this country, officials in this country, are unwilling to take a stand against militant unnatural behavior. So, you know, that's gonna backfire on us one of these days. And I would certainly hope that we don't go through the problems that we went through in 1954. In the previous hour, we also had on our good friend Keith Alexander talking about the Brown versus the Board of Education decision. There are some other stories in the news, and here's an interesting one that most people, again, we're talking about leftist hypocrisy and double standards on the left. Democrats hold the most negative view of Jews. Now, who would have thought that? 32% of Democrats polled by Stanford University said that they blame Jews a moderate amount to a great deal for the financial crisis in this country. That's compared with a little more than 18% of Republicans. So apparently multiculturalism, diversity, and the joys of inclusion are not working that well for Democrats. So we wonder what the Democrats are going to do to try to, change that perception of Jews in their own party. I mean, are they going to have sensitivity training? Are they going to have classes on sensitivity, visits to the Holocaust Museum? What are the Democrats going to do about their own party's negative view of Jews and blaming the Jews for the financial crisis?
Bill, I've got one for you. Now, tell me if you believe that there's a kernel of truth to this, because I saw it and I had a little hard time believing that these voters would have such an understanding of the way things really work. But I read, well, first of all, let's understand that every black American that voted last year voted for Barack Obama. And really, that's not an exaggeration. I mean, it was 95%+. So we can just say every black that voted for Obama. That would be pretty close to the truth. Now, I'm hearing that it is a lot of black Democrats who are are really speaking their mind about Jewish influence. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, in history proves that that's the case. A number of years ago, former congressman, I don't know if she's still in Congress or not, but name escapes me right now. But there was a congresswoman, black congresswoman from Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, who came out and made some critical remarks of Jews. And the Jews, apparently the Jews or the Jewish influence in the Republican Party, got her ousted from Congress. She was not reelected. And likewise, her father was also ousted from his office as a state senator for making similar comments about Jews. And let us not forget that it was Jesse Jackson who called New York City Heine Town. So, you know, there is some very strong negative feelings among blacks towards Jews. And once again, my challenge is to the Democratic Party. What are you going to do about this anti-Semitism in your own party, particularly among blacks? What actions are you going to take to resolve these negative and hostile feelings between blacks and Jews in your own party? And, you know, the party is just infested with racism and anti-Semitism, James, and they don't appear to be willing to really face up to the challenge. You know, they're not really willing to address this situation. And by the way, you know, 77% to 80% of American Jews voted for Obama. So certainly they must be offended, and I think there needs to be a comprehensive tour of the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and that probably will fix everything up.
Well, you know, it's a damnable thing when the pawns don't always go along with their marching orders, because, you know, and to their credit in this instance, black voters in California voted overwhelmingly for Proposition 8. So every now and then, you know, the people who have been used as a wedge against us by some of the Zionist overlords that we talk about don't always go along with the game plan that the coaches call.
And don't forget that the Black Congressional Caucus would not allow Congressman Steve Cohen, the white Jewish congressman from our own city, to join the Black Congressional Caucus. I mean, they just flat out denied him admission.
But, you know, they weren't called racist for that.
No, shocking. And he didn't call them racists or anti-Semites either. Isn't it amazing how well you can get along in this hostile environment of the Democratic Party?
Now, that there again, Bill, I mean, you want to talk about a classic double standard or an egregious disconnect. I mean, you can't get a better prime example of what we're talking about here with these hypocrisies than the Black Congressional Congress, which is an exclusively black club inside the United States Congress of all places, flat out denying membership to this Jewish Democrat, Steve Cohen, who is trying to join up with them in a gross attempt, a just embarrassing attempt at pandering. And they said, you can't come. You're not welcome here. You're not wanted here. You're not black. You can't come. And that wasn't racist, nor was it anti-Semitic, Bill. I mean, it's just kind of defies logic, doesn't it? Everything we do, whether it's racist or not, is racist in their eyes and in the eyes of people like Steve Cohen. And yet they can do this. And yet he only upped the pandering after that. I would have been embarrassed if I was him. But I guess, you know, I guess there is no shame.
No, because, I mean, what is he going to do? This district is 60% black. I mean, is he really going to come out with some, you know, pointing fingers about anti-Semitism and railing against anti-Semitism among blacks in his own party? Of course not.
Well, I got one for you. Yeah, I was just going to say, Bill, I got one for you here, and this is off topic, and people who are fortunate enough to live outside of modern-day Memphis, they might not know what's going on here, but Willie Harrington, the black mayor of Memphis, who's been king since 1993, 94, 92. He's been in there forever. He's as corrupt as you can get. I mean, he is under indictment or federal investigation perpetually. He says he wants to run against Steve Cohen, Bill, and he's not going to make race an issue if he does. You think that's what do you think about that?
He doesn't need to make race an issue. Because with 60% of the vote being black in this city, all he needs is the majority of the black vote to win a seat. And as far as I'm concerned, Steve Cohen is really going to have to put on a real a carnival show to win the election. He seems to be confident that he would beat Harrington, but don't underestimate the power of racial solidarity. After all, it's worked for the Jews. Why does he think that it's not going to take place with the blacks?
Well, it's going to be so interesting. I would want Harrington to win that just to slap around the face of a guy who really has power like Cohen. I mean, Harrington's a corrupt joke anyway. So what? I mean, in fact, he would be more fitting to represent a Memphis district in Congress than Cohen, truth be known. But we're talking about local politics here. We're going to get back on national politics in the next segment. It's kind of segued into this. But, you know, I think Steve Cohen could become the next Terry Rowland in this area. You know, Terry Rowland, of course, no relation to Bill Rowlin, of course, our great co-host. But Terry Rowland tried to pander to people, and it didn't work out. I would love for Steve Cohen to be the recipient of such a fate, and I think he would. I think Harrington wins in a landslide, but we'll just see what happens here. And of course, that is even if Harrington decides to run, which he changes his mind on what he's going to do every day. But again, it couldn't be a more fitting representation of his district than to send Harrington to Washington. That's what Memphis deserves.
Well, I think so too. And but what will happen is probably Steve Cohen would run for mayor. You know, you lose either way.
We'll be back right after this. They
took the home. Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, we're back. By the way, I always like to plug this at least once or twice a show. Don't forget to visit our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, to stay in touch with what we're all doing throughout the week in between our nightly broadcasts here on the Liberty News Radio Network every Saturday evening at 6 p.m. Central Time. You can catch us at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Check out our blog, sign up for our email newsletter. And while you're there, you can read the article that we were talking about a little bit earlier this hour, the article that mentioned us in the London Times. Of course, earlier this month, we were mentioned in Newsweek magazine. So the Political Cesspool staying relevant and certainly, to say the least, remaining on the radar of these heavyweight, the heavyweight mainstream media. I think it serves as further proof that our show continues to stand the test of time and that we've got a name recognition and credibility that only comes from having consistently and professionally advocated the issues of interest to our people without retreat, surrender, or apology. And this is something, you know, the notoriety, I say notoriety, I guess that would be a bad thing, the acclaim that this show continues to receive both from our listening audience and the emails and letters that we receive from you, and of course from the scars that we suffer from the mainstream media. This is something that we've all accomplished together. We couldn't do it without you and our listening audience. We're very proud to have you by our side. Continuing on with the show tonight, again, we've been covering a lot of ground, skipping back and forth this evening, talking about the rise that Russia is experiencing, the downfall of America and the United Kingdom and, well, the rest of Europe and Australia and Canada. All of the Western world except for Russia appears to be on a downfall. But it just goes to show, I mean, who would have thought that America would have looked like this in 1954? Yeah, who in 1954 would have ever thought America could have become what it has become? But then again, who in 1954 would have ever thought that Russia would be the key to our potential key to our survival in 2009? It just shows anything can happen. We can change, you know, we can change the future if we can get past, I think, our biggest hurdle, which is being afraid to be labeled to be saddled with a Marxist construct like racist or anti-Semite or whatever they want to call us by our enemies in the media. If we can get over that, we can do things, and we can do things about people like Governor Deval Patrick, Bill, the governor of Massachusetts. Here we go again. I mean, this guy has declared war on gun owners unlike any that I've ever seen. He is proposing legislation up there in Massachusetts that anyone who buys two guns in one 30-day period, or if you buy two guns in a month, you would be subjected to a prison term of 30 months. Likewise, if you're lawfully carrying a gun and are charged with a misdemeanor, such as, a traffic violation, if you're guilty of an obscure misdemeanor that has nothing to do with guns, but you're carrying a gun for which you have a permit, you'll also be going away to prison. This is what they're pushing down the throat of the people in Massachusetts, Bill.
Deval Patrick is a... How should I put this? He follows a very strict leftist line on prosecutions. And much as activist judges pass laws that have nothing to do with the Constitution, Deval Patrick will prosecute people that have never committed a crime. And so this is just another way the left is trying to push the agenda of getting around the Constitution. And I would certainly hope that the Supreme Court would strike down any such ruling, but who knows? Who knows how far Deval will go with this? But he is a menace to the Constitution, and I'm sure that Eric Holder and Deval Patrick have quite a few little tabletop conversations about how they can punch holes in the Constitution at every opportunity. We're in for a world of trouble over the next 4 years, and I hope people realize it. And the only solution, we have discussed this before on the show, is strengthening the governments in the states. Strengthening the governments in the states against the intrusion of the federal government into basically the federal government overthrowing the Constitution and thus doing away with the states. So, we have got to put people in office that are going to stand up for states' rights, for the 10th Amendment, for the First and Second Amendments, and to say that they are not going to allow the federal government to become the dictating power and the authoritarian and totalitarian powers at the state level.
Well, Bill, to contrast that pretty horrendous news from Massachusetts, I actually wanted to infuse that topic into the conversation tonight, because when I went to our mailbox today for the political cesspool, our P.O. box, and of course the contact information for our show is available on our website if you ever want to send us a letter. We get letters every day from listeners around the country, indeed from around the world, and a letter I got just today, Bill, comes from a listener in Massachusetts who was kind enough to send a donation along with his note. It's written by a listener by the name of Ken out of Easton, Massachusetts, and he says this: "Greetings from Massachusetts, the belly of the liberal beast. You've probably heard, and I hadn't actually heard about this until he had written today, you've probably heard about the trolley accident in Boston where a text messaging driver slammed one trolley into another, which resulted in 50 injuries. When the story first broke up here, I wondered how a 24-year-old white male even landed a job at the MBTA, which is a hotbed of diversity and affirmative action. Now I know. The guy used to be a girl and was hired to fill a transgender quota. You gotta love it. The good news is, according to Ken, and I'll take his word for it, as unlikely as it seems, the good news is there's a sizable percentage of the population, even in Massachusetts, that is beginning to realize the system is corrupt to the core. Keep up the good work on the radio." Bill, this is something that I guess Deval Patrick would approve of. Could you imagine, now you've got quotas and set-asides for transgendered individuals, and that's how this 24-year-old seemingly white male got the job. We say it every week at some point during the show, you just can't make this stuff up, but I thank Ken for writing the letter.
Well, I wonder how many white Anglo-Saxon Protestant slots are set aside in these government jobs. Every time I go in a government office, the one thing I don't see is a white male. You see every other variety, but you don't see white males until you get to the fire department and the police department. Then you see some. But if you go into an administrative office, a government office, anywhere, I would guess, in this country, you're not going to see many white men running anything. And so, you know, the fact that this sort of administrative bureaucracy is under the control of minorities is why so much is wrong in this country, because we're not represented within the bureaucratic system. And the bureaucratic system is really what gets things moving in government, even whether in the right direction or the wrong direction. And we don't have influence there anymore. And our elected officials don't even have any influence in these various government positions. So, you know, as long as this bureaucracy is allowed to continue basically alienating and dispossessing white American Christian males, the slide is going to continue, because it's the bureaucracy that runs this country, not the elected government.
All right, Bill, with that being said, we're coming to the end of the second hour. We have one more full hour in tonight's live installment of the Political Cesspool Radio program. We've got the national news coming up here. And after that, when we head into the third hour, we are going to give you some detailed information about a public appearance that Bill and I will be participating in, that, of course, being the annual Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference, which is being held this year, the last weekend in June, in Jackson, Mississippi. We're going to be talking a lot about that and how you can come and meet us in the flesh. I guess it would be more of an honor for us to meet you than the other way around, but we want to see you. Let me put it that way. We'll be there, though, and it's always a good time to be had. And in addition to discussing that and giving you some information about how you can join us down there, it's always a pleasure, truly it is, to meet the listeners and fans of this radio program and the opportunities that are afforded to us each year, such as this one, where we have the opportunity to go out in public and say hello to everyone. I tell you, Bill, nothing's more fun. This is what I mark my calendar and look forward to every year. So we're going to talk about that and also some more news forthcoming during the third hour. I've got a riddle for you. The riddle is, and this you'll have to solve this. We'll get to the rest of the story in the third hour. An African-American, no, yes, but here's what it is. A medical student was suspended for calling himself African-American. All right, a medical student was suspended for calling himself an African-American. How did that happen in Martin Luther King's Diversity Wonderland? Bill, do you have an idea?
I think I know the story, and I look forward to the discussion in the next hour, because it's really amazing. And I think it speaks very much to what kind of identity you're allowed to have in this country and what kind of identity you're not allowed to have.
Gotta go to break. We'll answer the riddle in the third hour. Stay tuned.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.